But I have been thinking a lot about angels and ghosts and dreams, and it seems like I'm not the only one. It mentioned last hour a story that we linked up at that was ABC News had done earlier in the week about seeing angels on the site of Flight 93, the crash site of Flight 93 on 9/11. An FBI agent that was there that saw all of these, had these impressions that were being made on her, and she was just overwhelmed by it, but didn't say anything to anybody until she sorted it out and wrote it in a book. And it's just one of many stories I've been hearing lately. And of course, that ghost story that I told last hour, if you don't have it yet, by the way, get Coast Insider. You can go back and listen to any hour, anytime at coasttocoastam.com. But that's just part of why I asked Dr. Judith Orloff to join us in conversation tonight. She's written a book many years ago called Second Sight, although there's a new MP3 version of that that's on her website. There's also an interesting package that she's put together about developing your own intuition, and you can buy that package. That's at her website, which you can find by linking up to her through coasttocoastam.com. Just go to tonight's guests. And she'll be doing a presentation. She's always doing something. She's going to be speaking to a group coming up. It's the Awakening Intuition, and I think it's pronounced Esalen, but we'll find out just a second later on this month. So she's always got something, and you can find out more there. But tonight she's going to give us some time to talk about who's trying to communicate to us and what can we learn, or is it all just our subconscious taking these different forms, as another story in the news indicated. We'll find out next on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Punnett. It's always a pleasure, Dr. Judith Orloff.
Hello, Ian.
I should just because it's always helpful to establish your bona fides, all the reasons why you are the perfect guest for any of these topics. Let's just go through some of the things you do. Assistant Clinical Professor of Psychiatry at UCLA. You're an MD, right? Because you're a
Correct.
psychiatrist, had to do all that. Although you don't like, did you ever practice, by the way? I know it's been a while since I've read your book about your life. So you never did practice like as a medical doctor, did you?
Oh, I've been practicing for over 25 years.
Well, tell me what you mean by that. I mean, like, where you actually do like emergency work or something, work in an ER or anything?
Well, I'm a psychiatrist and I'm also an intuitive. So what I do is I combine traditional medical knowledge with intuition, energy medicine, spirituality, and a great appreciation for angels, guides, and the unknown.
Oh, no, I get that. What I just mean is, you never did, I mean, other than what you had to do to get your MD when you were becoming a psychiatrist, you never had a practice where you were like working as like an internal medicine or doing anything like, because I think that'd be kind of cool if you're sitting in a hospital room and your on-call physician walks in and it's Dr. Judith Orloff.
Yes, I did for many years. I did my psychiatric residency at UCLA and medical internship at Wadsworth VA. And I've been in private practice in psychiatry for over 25 years. So I see patients all the time. I've seen patients for years in emergency rooms, on hospital wards. I used to be the chief resident at consultation liaison at UCLA, which means I would go as a psychiatrist to treat patients in the oncology wards, in the
Oh, very
burn
interesting.
units,
Of course.
and all over the hospital, to lend my expertise to what was going on medically, because there's always mind, body, spirit going on. And I see patients every week, and it's like my core love, my core discipline is seeing one-to-one patients in addition to giving workshops and writing. So yes, I mean, I actively see patients and I adore it. I think it's so important to stay in touch with the clinical.
And also then an author of many books, and I know you've got many more still coming out of you. So thank you though for kind of giving us kind of a like a little bit of a survey of your experiences as I threw out this topic about angels, ghosts, and dreams. How do you define each of those, Dr. Judith Orloff?
Well, You know, in Second Sight, I talk about the dreams that have guided my life and the angels that have guided my life, because I believe that, you know, I could have gone off in many wrong directions. I mean, I ran from my intuition for many, many years because my parents squashed it. I wasn't allowed to talk about it at home. I was uncomfortable with it, talking about it as a doctor in medicine. And so, you know, over the years, I talk about, you know, my intuitions and my dreams that guided me. But what angels and guides are, it can be tapping into your inner self and your inner wisdom only, or it could be that in conjunction with tapping into a larger reality, the spiritual world that is part of psychotherapy. It's the essence of what I write about in Second Sight. It's tapping into a world larger than ourselves, the unseen, for guidance, for energy, and for protection. And that this is a huge part of health and healing, is because our linear mind only knows so much. And the problem I have with many traditional doctors is that they think they know it all via the linear mind. And to me, it's only like a little drop. Now, there's most of what's going on we don't know, you see. And that's where the mystery comes in, the mystery of healing, the mystery of timing, the mystery of, you know, of tapping into forces greater than ourselves to help us along the way as we, you know, travel on this earth.
You know, I'm going to ask you, though, to drop a definition of ghosts somewhere in between those types of messaging from angels and dreams. How do ghosts fit into your universe?
Well, ghosts are spirits that have died. And, you know, I used to work with Dr. Thelma Moss at UCLA in her parapsychology lab when she was there, and we would go investigate ghosts. And so a team of us, this is way before Ghostbusters came out, and, you know, we would go out to houses and investigate strange phenomena, and people would often describe cupboards opening and shutting, weird bruises on their bodies, machines going off and on, you know, all kinds of phenomena. And what we found mostly was that phenomena was a reflection of the energy of the family in the house. And a lot of them had stress and trauma and, you know, a lot of psychokinetic energy around them. And when the stress was resolved, the phenomena stopped. So that is often misinterpreted as ghosts, but there are really, you know, spirits who have not traveled on, who linger for many reasons, and with patients. And in Second Sight, I write about how I work with patients when a loved one has passed on. In my office or in workshops, we try to communicate, you know, with the loved one to find out if they need anything. And they often do. You know, they often have unfinished business. And so to me, that's a ghost. A ghost is a spirit that hasn't left the earth plane yet.
So there's always kind of a conversation for some people about how these things all fit together. And can we understand these things as supernatural? But to hear you describe them, they're not supernatural. They're completely natural.
Oh, totally. I mean, in my world, the way I perceive things, it's all in a continuum. It's not supernatural. Supernatural is a figment of the intellectual mind. There is no supernatural. It's all natural. It's just a matter of how far we can perceive it. And with Second Sight, what you can do is expand the boundaries of linear perception to see all kinds of things. I mean, since ancient times, people have been describing angels and guides and ghosts and spirits in other worlds. I mean, there are so many dimensions that the linear mind couldn't understand in a million years, but our intuition can. You see, that's why in Second Sight, I talk about intuition so much. Intuition is the inner voice inside it that tells you the truth about things and that functions in a non-linear way, because from an intuitive point of view, there is no past, present, and future. It's all one. You're just in a oneness, and within that oneness, your consciousness can expand dramatically, and you can see certain things. And as a psychiatrist, and I love to train healthcare professionals to do this, I teach them how to incorporate intuition into patient care so they can see farther than what the patient is telling them, that they can see enough to see guides around them to help patients tap into their inner guidance inside themselves as well as their guides. I mean, it's so mysterious and wondrous, you know, what the human is capable of when you get beyond the linear mind and expand into the spiritual realm.
Yeah, I've argued for a long time for people that I think the problem comes when we try sometimes to whenever we get into a situation where we're trying to put a kind of catechism to mysticism.
Right.
When we try to make it too detailed in the explanation that mysticism has frayed edges to it, and those little threads that go off just are better off, you know, untended, because as soon as you try to sew up everything together really tightly, you constrict it to the point where I think you can prevent even understanding it in the first place.
I think that is absolutely true, and that is a severe limitation of traditional medicine, is that they want everything to be explained by statistics, and I'm sorry that that's just not possible. And it's a type of arrogance and need to control reality, which is not possible either. You see, but, you know, in myself, because I've had so many struggles coming to terms with my intuition and getting comfortable with it so that I can have a voice. And you know, when I wrote Second Sight, it took me 7 years to write that book because I had so much fear about coming out as a psychiatrist and intuitive. I was afraid of what my peers would think. I was just afraid of being chastised and mocked or criticized, whatever. But I'm happy to say I have found my intuitive voice, and I'm very comfortable with it. I was not afraid. Now, as a child, I was very afraid that what I was predicting I was causing, such as, you know, if I picked up an earthquake, I was afraid that somehow I caused it, or if I picked up a death, that somehow I was associated with it. And that just is not true. Now, children are just open to various signals, and negative or traumatic signals are just louder, so it's easier to perceive. It has nothing to do with causing it. And so I had all kinds of fears I had to work through. But now at this point in my life, and actually when Second Sight was published, I finally had a voice. And I can't tell you how liberating that is, and I hope that can inspire listeners. Now, in terms of trying to find your intuitive voice and trying to find your messengers and your angels, because they're there, no matter how distraught someone feels or how lost someone feels, you have to close your eyes. You could do it right now as you're listening to us and tune in to something larger than yourself by focusing on your breath, opening your heart, and ask to have the ability to sense and see this, and just wait and see what happens. You can't do anything else. You just have to be receptive with intuition. You can't force it. But I guarantee everyone that this reality is there, and it is of utmost importance in life to have faith in this.
Yeah, I think we all put our faith in something, and I think we all do, because we all accept something on faith. So it could just be even faith in our own intelligence, or faith in our own bodies, or faith in our own, but things that we can't necessarily see or test, we still accept them, and we're willing to make that leap with them. This was kind of the theme of this news story that I read last hour about scientists at the University of British Columbia that are investigating Ouija boards. Mm-hmm. And it was their belief that they are essentially mirrors to the subconscious of the people that are participating, and that there is no otherworldly messaging going on, but rather a part of the subconscious brain of the participants that's being triggered by this opportunity to reach out. And whereas the conscious mind feels as though this is not something which is coming from within, the unconscious mind is reaching out to be heard, and even though it takes the form of a supernatural experience, it really is just something that's also very cool. It's just a fraction of that person trying to talk to the whole. What do you think of that theory?
I think it's a bunch of scientists trying to put something in a pat explanation. I mean, I'm very wary of Ouija boards. I mean, when you close your eyes and you put your hands on that Ouija board, you're attracting energies, and man, there are a lot out there that you don't want to mess with. So you don't just open up in general to all the energies of the world. That is asking for big trouble, You don't want to do that. It's not just, I mean, maybe your unconscious mind is involved a little bit, but with the Ouija board, you're setting your intention. You're a setup for whatever wants to, you know, that's hanging around. Your Ouija board can come in you, and you don't want that. It's like in Ghost with the Whoopi Goldberg character, and all these spirits were jumping in her body.
Right.
You don't want that. That is really bad. That is really dangerous. And as a psychiatrist, I never recommend that people use Ouija boards. There's ways of communicating with loved ones who have passed on that don't require a Ouija board. All you have to do is close your eyes, go in, and ask to connect. The Ouija board is something different because that's opening yourself up to all the spirits and all the negative and positive energies out there. But when you're specifically trying to communicate with a loved one, you are setting your intention and going right for their hearts, wherever they are, right for their spirits. So it's directional. Ouija boards are not directional at all, so I don't recommend them.
I want to get back to, and we will throughout the evening, the subject of angels, ghosts,
yes,
and dreams and the messengers in our lives and what they're trying to tell us. But you did hit on something earlier that made me think about our guest last hour. We were talking with a tandem surf champion who's written a book called Deep in the Wave, and it's all about his experiences of using his surfing to reach to a part of where the creator and the creation connect deep in these waves. It's a very interesting story.
Right.
But he said something, we got to talking about the way in which he as a man communes with nature, that every day this physical challenge of surviving these waves requires a series of things which he has to do to prepare himself, you know, body and soul for what he's going to encounter in some of these 60 and 70 foot waves, and that he has to accept these rites of passage, that everything he's always learning, he's always pushing himself, he's always finding these new things inside of himself, and then that connects him to something bigger than himself at the same time. And we got to talking about how there's very few rites of passage for men in particular have been kind of downplayed or not even seemingly necessary. And I wonder what the relationship is with our intuition or with a sense of our survival instinct, and that we don't really tap into it because we don't use it that much.
Yes, certainly in Western culture, men are not encouraged at all to tap into their intuition. And women are more encouraged, but not nearly enough as far as, you know, I'm concerned. The level I'm talking about, really going deep and playing and exploring with where you can go. You know, women, you know, you can trust your gut feeling. That's one form of intuition. Having children is a rite of passage for women, and often they one rite of passage, and they often have women often have intuitions about their children, if their children are in danger, if their children need anything. So that's very commonly accepted in our culture, women's intuition. But men, you know, in Western culture, forget it. I mean, the shamans, of course, are deeply in touch with their intuition. The Aboriginal people believe more in the reality of dreams than they do in the waking life. And this is men and women, you see, but men in Western culture haven't been communing with spirit from the beginning in order to have the visions that one constantly needs to navigate this world. And intuition can give you that. That's why in Second Sight, I talk about how essential it is for men and women to learn how to quiet the mind, go inward, and listen to that still small voice inside every day, and in reverence, say thank you for it, be grateful for it, and be open with humility to that guidance, because it's a gift. And the downside of opening up intuition, I've seen so many people get trapped by their egos and the powers and the phenomena of intuition that come when you open up. They can come. And, you know, you have to be very careful on this path not to get trapped there, because that's a going nowhere path. You know, you get stuck. You'll never be able to grow in that way. I mean, you've seen a lot of teachers who've developed powers. They have real powers, but their egos are so in the way. The powers are useless to me. It's just like, you know, a showman or a showwoman.
We'll get back to that, because I'll present an alternative context then for how people can explore that. Coming up next with Dr. Judith Orloff, we'll talk more about angels, ghosts, and dreams on Coast to Coast. I've just been going back and forth a little bit with one of our affiliate stations, Ryan, at 1370 WSPD in Toledo, Ohio, which I believe used to be overseen by my friend Steve Conrad. There was a ghost. He said they had some ghostly experiences at the radio station there because they were doing some like rehab work. They were doing some remodeling. And so there have been more and more ghost sightings. It's been interesting to listen, he said, to the show alone in that building. And he said that it was, he heard sobbing while he was the only one at the building a little while back. This used to happen to me a little bit at a radio station in the Quad Cities called 97X. And there was many ghosts, I mean, recurring ghosts in that building, but not so surprising in that the building had been originally built for and served for about 50 years as a funeral home. It's a beautiful mansion. It was a great place to put a radio station. Now I think there are like 8 radio stations in there or something. But at the time, it was just two radio stations in there and a lot of empty space. Well, or was it? We'll talk more about what are the messages that are being sent to us if we can only receive them. Feels like intuition, right? Sometimes maybe that's what it is, just intuition. Or maybe what we pass off as intuition is actually some direct message from some other plane. Angels, ghosts, and dreams. We'll get back to that next on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Punnett. We're talking with Dr. Judith Orloff, and you can hook up with her just by going to coasttocoastam.com. You can find out more both about the MP3 version of Second Sight, but also a couple of different ways that you can either attend in person or get a virtual seminar on developing your intuition as well. I was just listening to that commercial. Did you hear that commercial with the guy talking about bacon?
Mm-hmm.
So today I was in church and doing kind of a standard Sunday service this morning. All's well. But my mind wandered terribly. The priest was telling the story about when Jesus punishes the swine by sending demons into the swine, and then the swine jump off this cliff, right? Mm-hmm. And all I kept thinking of is, that would be really good bacon. Like demons, yeah. In the demon bacon. I can't resist bacon as it is. The demon bacon, why, that could only be doubly good. I couldn't get my mind off that for the rest of the. So we're just talking about developing one's intuition vis-a-vis this conversation I had last hour with this guy, Bear Wozniak, and he was talking about how there really aren't, for most people growing up in the United States, there really aren't the kind of rites of passage. There's nothing hard about our rites of passage. Our rites of passage now are like, you know, getting a driver's license, you know, graduating high school, going to college, that kind of a thing. And there's nothing that's physically taxing about that. There's nothing that necessarily brings you to a different place. So I wondered, is that also part of why, you know, alcohol use, drug use, bankruptcy, depression, whether all of these things could be tied into the fact that we don't get enough out of our experiences, and maybe just only subconsciously we can have a sense, or we're prone to having a sense of, is this all there is? And yeah, that by putting ourselves into these different places where both men or women, but mostly I think men are the ones that aren't getting enough of it, that kind of stimulation that really pushes us to the edge a little bit more. And I don't mean something stupid. I don't mean like getting drunk and jumping off a garage into a kiddie pool or something, but I mean doing something that, you know, that really pushes you out into nature where you can find that nexus between the creator, both outside and inside of us. What do you think of that theory?
Well, part of how I teach intuition and Second Sight is telling people to go out in nature and meditate in nature and get in touch with the spirits of the trees and the flowers and the animals, the coyotes, the bears, whoever, whatever kind of animals you have in the forests or places where you live, and looking up at the sky and feeling the spirit of the sky, much like the Native American philosophy. But the thing about intuition that I love so much is that it's all experiential. This isn't something you're making up. You're going into nature as a form of reverence to connect with spirits other than yourself. And, you know, I warn people about going into forests or nature in the dark, because the energy is a bit different in the dark when you go into the dark forest. That, you know, it can be very wild in there. There are many different kinds of spirits. It's not all fairy spirits and sweetness and light. I mean, the world is made up of positive, dark, and light energies. And that's true with nature. I mean, nature can be extremely beautiful, but it can be wild and dangerous and tsunamis and, you know, all kinds of ways nature out of balance. So when nature gets angry, it can respond to human beings. But part of daily life and listening to intuition, and for me it's the water. I live on the ocean. I tune into intuitively to the water. The water is a great source of intuition for me, and two-thirds of our bodies are made up of water. And so there's something that deeply resonates in me. And so when I want to tune in, you know, even with patients, you know, when I'm trying to, you know, tune in and understand my patients, I'll go to the water and look into surfaces of water, see the reflection, and I'll get intuitions from that in order how to proceed with the patients or if I have a question about my own life. But I use water as a catalyst. I'm not a surfer, as your previous guest was, but I'm body surfer. I've lived by the water. It's my nurturing. When I'm away from the water too long, it's very hard for me because it is my intuitive source. You see, yeah. So nature, the elements, fire, air, water, and earth, all contain magical powers. And when you begin to meditate on them, when you begin to revere the elements as in ancient times, you get so many intuitions because you're tapping into elemental forces, and that's what's missing in our society. I mean, kids today don't know elemental forces from anything. I mean, they don't know any of this. They've lost touch. I mean, I can't say all of them, but... You know,
I think there's truth that we're far removed from our agrarian roots about even the source of food. There's this whole movement just to make people aware of this. Where does the food come from?
Yes, and the energy of food and the spirit of food. From my standpoint as a psychiatrist and an intuitive, there is spirit in everything. I mean, there's spirit in food, there's spirit in water, there's spirit in fire, there's spirit in human beings, there's spirit in the grass. How you connect with that is through your intuition. It's not through your head. Your head will say, oh, the sunset is so beautiful. Isn't that a beautiful sunset? But your intuition will absorb the energy of the sunset and connect to the spirit of the sunset to go deeper into the powers of what we've been given here. You see, and that's what interests me about intuition in my own life, in my own spiritual and intuitive development. I want to go very deep with consciousness at the same time being cognizant there are dark forces out there that I don't want to invite in. So you have to be discriminating in your opening up to intuition and developing intuition. That's what I talk about in that developing intuition package that you referred to. But you can't just go wide open and open up to everything that's out there. That would be foolish and dangerous. You've got to learn, as we've talked about before, to deal with the energy vampires,
right,
to deal with negative forces so that you don't absorb them. You don't want that. You want the good stuff. You don't want the dark stuff.
You know, I'll challenge you at least in part in that by saying that part of me says that I trust so that I don't have to fear. And I know that there's a good element to fear in that fear properly means a kind of respect for a situation. But I also think in that balance of things that my optimistic nature leads me into things that other people are fearful about. But because they are fearful of it, that means that they don't, they also don't experience the reward from that risk.
Right.
And I really, I'm very interested in that reward risk ratio, because so much of what I experience, the blessings in my life, are just because I'm always willing to risk things. And I'm willing to risk even going into places or trying things that other people would, could make a very logical argument for would be foolish.
Right. Right. Well, you know, I don't think it's either or. I mean, I think our being human, we've been given the biochemical fear response for a reason. And it's, you know, on the biological level, it's for survival. And this is true, let's say a child runs out in the street, you know, you're going to grab them, you know,
right.
Or if somebody comes after you, you're going to be afraid and you're going to run. And I think this is all good.
No, I think that's good. I just mean, when you were describing like going into the woods at night,
yeah.
That's exactly where I like to go. That's exactly what I like to do.
Yeah, but there's a lot out there. I mean, when you tune in, it's, and you don't know what you're going to get out there. I mean, but I mean, I'm not saying don't go into the woods at night, but I would.
But when as soon as you said don't go in the woods, I'm like, that's where I'm going. That's where.
Yeah,
where are those woods? I'll go there right now. I think I benefit more in the long run by risking those things than by saying yeah, I don't want to do that.
But
and
you
know what I'm saying?
Discriminating though. You know, and if something was going to harm you or your family, you know, let's
True.
Say it was a spirit, you're not going to say, oh, come on in, you know. No.
Wouldn't do that. Wouldn't do that. But I just merely making that point. You made it sound really fun. So maybe once a year, maybe we should have a national holiday where we take one day a year where we, as a people, we do one thing that pushes us. And, you know, we can do it more than just that one day, but just to set that example of trying to learn from what we can lean into, what we're resisting. And just that one time a year, we lean into what we're resisting. And, you know, some people go bungee cord jumping. Some people jump out of plane. Some people get in a boat. Some people do whatever that they wouldn't ordinarily do, just to find out collectively as a society to shift our paradigm for just 24 hours and take us out of the routine of what our lives are.
Well, you know, I'm all for pushing levels of consciousness. I think we can do it every day, though. I mean, you're talking about physical challenges that will, you know, like vision quests and...
Yeah,
you know,
a little bit.
How to challenge yourself physically, not just on the inner world. And I think there's so much to that. I mean, through surfing, I mean, the magic of surfing and attuning to a wave and feeling the forces of nature, my goodness. I mean, you're going right to source with that. You see, but my feeling is, and what I do in my life, is that I do try and do that every day, maybe not go bungee jumping, but in my meditations, I go inward.
That's good, too.
And going into the unknown is quite an adventure. And I want to make a point for all the listeners. This isn't just something, you know, for rare people who can do it. It's for everybody. I mean, I've devoted my, you know, professional life to teaching people how to tap into this and to see there's something larger than the mind. I mean, if for people listening, if you want to do this, begin by just closing your eyes and listening to your gut or listening to your body. Or asking for inner guidance. You know, that's such a powerful tool I talk about in Second Sight, where you close your eyes. Let's say you have a question and you need guidance. Maybe it's from your outer guides or your inner guide, but ask one question. Don't ask more than one, because then you'll confuse the answers. Ask one question, go inward, and wait to receive the answer. Wait. You don't search for it. You wait. You either get any images, impressions, sights, smells, sounds, ahas, whatever you get. And then don't analyze it, just write it down and then see how it applies to your question. And to get used to problem solving in that way, you may be tapping into your inner wisdom, or you can experiment with finding outer guides, your angels that are around you. I believe everybody has angels around them, but most people are unaware because they're just in their heads.
Right.
Part of, you know, psychotherapy, as I practice it, is getting in touch with these angels. We need our angels desperately, as life could be tough. And we need to have this source of guidance. When I was a little girl, and this is a story I wrote about in Second Sight, I had a dream where my dead grandfather took me to see the angels in heaven. And I'll never forget this. I heard the music of the spheres. And I'll never forget the resonant tones of the angels singing as I came back down from my visit with them. And I opened up my eyes in bed. I was about 9 years old. And I could still hear them singing. And my mother, who was in the next room, rushed in. And she had got some vibe that I was kidnapped or unsafe. And she came in and says, "Are you all right?" And I'm sitting there in bed hearing this beautiful sound of the angels singing. And it was, you know, unforgettable. It's in my cells. It's something I will never forget. It's beyond any sound that's in this earth. It's the music of the spheres, I guess. And it's just something I was able to experience as a young child, which was such a blessing to me.
A celestial choir.
Yes. Have you ever heard them?
The Choir Invisible. Yes. I have not. And I have pursued sound in so many ways. I have, yes, of course, suffered from this debilitating tinnitus over the last couple of years. Yes. And I keep wondering what that sign is. And I know everyone, the first thing everybody says, oh, it's a sign that you should slow down, or it's a sign that you, but I think that's actually too easy an explanation of what it means and what it's trying to tell me. And it, I keep trying to sort that out a bit too. So
reach for the celestial choir.
Yeah. That'd be nice. Oh, wouldn't that be awful if they were singing right now and I just couldn't hear them?
I'm sure they are.
That dang tinnitus just blocks them up. So we're talking with Dr. Judith Orloff. We've got more coming up next hour, too. Angels, ghosts, and dreams, the messengers in our life and what they're trying to tell us. So I wonder why do some things come to us in dreams? Why do some times do messages come to us angelically, and why sometimes ghosts? What are, if you had to try to understand the difference of that, what can we know about the messages just based on the mode in which they are sent?
Yes, well, angels can come through in dreams.
Right. So can ghosts, so people say.
Hopefully,
right?
Hopefully not. I mean, the good relative, the loved one. So,
right.
You don't want, yeah, right. That they could, that, you know, people have passed on, come through in dreams all the time. You know, that's something everybody needs to know. And, of course, you know, the Freudians would say, oh, that's wish fulfillment. If you have a loved one who's passed on and they come to you in a dream, it's just you want them to be all right. And
right.
I hope everybody can really trust your own experience with this. I mean, I've worked with so many people in workshops and patients who have had legitimate visitations from loved ones who have come back in dreams. And they all, you know, a lot of them say the same thing. They want to let the one who's still living know that they're all right. You know, and they often come back in the form of their younger years where they're healthy, you know, and they're vibrant. And they just want you to know they're okay, because they know how much we worry over here with our poor linear minds trying to figure it all out, you know, and never will the linear mind be satisfied about an afterlife. The linear mind just can't get it. It's the intuition that can
okay.
get it.
But I'm going to push on that a little bit.
Okay,
so if the thought comes to us in the form of an angel, then, or if we feel like it's an angel, can we assume by just the fact that it's an angel that this is a message from God? If it comes in the form of from a ghostly apparition, some sort of encounter, what can we assume from the mode of that, of the way that message has been communicated? What can we assume about the origin of the message from a ghost? And then is there any way we can assume from inside of the of a dream? Like, so hang on to those things. I just, again, that's, I'm sort of trying to sort that out. If it's an angel message, can we assume it comes from the divine? If it's a ghostly message, do we assume that it comes from the afterlife? If it's a dream, what can we assume about that as well? we'll find out coming up in just a minute. Dr. Judith Orloff. Again, she's got all sorts of fun things put up on her website, things for you to buy, participate in, upcoming seminars, and a seminar that she's put together, a virtual seminar on raising your intuitional awareness. You can link up to her through coasttocoastam.com. And also, if you, I think at any time, you can always, if you go to the page with my bio information on there too, it'll say Deacon Punnett, at Deacon Punnett. I've been having fun keeping in touch with people on Twitter tonight, enjoying that these various experiences you all are tweeting me. Keep sharing them. Keep reading them. We'll get to your phone calls too coming up later on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Punnett.